$86.2 billion. That's how much the largest nonprofits in the United States reported in revenue in 2019. The numbers come from the Nonprofit Times 33rd Annual NPT 100 report, featured in the November edition. I'm Mark Arivna, and we'll talk about the numbers with Jacob Harold, Executive Vice President of Candid, on this episode of Fresh Research.
Welcome to Fresh Research, a podcast from the Nonprofit Times. We explore some of the most interesting and sometimes provocative findings focused on the world of nonprofits. Thanks for tuning in. Here at the Nonprofit Times, we see tons of great, fresh research. So in each episode, we take a recent study or survey and have a conversation with the authors about what they found and why they think it's important for charities. We'll also give away some books and give you access to other valuable information from the Nonprofit Times.
The NPT 100 compiles data mainly from a nonprofit's Form 990. We had a little help again this year from Candid in getting some hard-to-reach organizations. Grant Thornton also helps crunch the numbers and analyze the data. Some baselines of the report for this episode's discussion: organizations must raise at least 10% of overall revenue from public support. So if an organization gets much of its revenue from program service or government support, it's not included. That's the case for many hospitals and even some arts organizations that are heavily funded by the federal government, program fees, or even in some cases, investment income. Universities and donor advised funds are also not included in the list. Nonprofits that get a mix of revenue are typically those at the top of the NPT 100. The Y is usually number one, and that's the case again this year with $8 billion reported in total revenue. Number 100 is WGBH Educational Foundation with about $204 billion. Among those new to the list this year are Los Angeles County Museum of Art at number 76 and the National Office of the ACLU Foundation at number 99. Now, here's my conversation with Jacob Harold, Executive Vice President of Candid. Having looked at the data, what are your main takeaways from the 100 this year?
You know, it's hard not to answer that question in the context of this moment when we have all eyes on the political sphere. And, you know, for me, my main takeaway was almost an emotional one, which was, you know, looking at the names of the organizations in the NPT 100 and thinking about how concrete that was compared to, you know, the common conversations I often find myself in about civil society or the social sector as kind of an abstract. Looking and just seeing these names, you know, the YMCA, Goodwill, Salvation Army, the Smithsonian, Ronald McDonald House, you know, these sort of institutions that are part of the community fabric of this country. And so for me, my main takeaway was, in a sense, a sense of relief to be reminded of the scale and relative health of some of these institutions. And I see them as, you know, a fundamentally good part of American society. And so I left a bit encouraged. There are obviously lots of subplots in this data that I'm sure we'll talk about, but my overwhelming takeaway was relief.
Yeah, it makes for a very interesting year when we look at this year's data. When you mention relief, I'm sure the numbers make it look like nonprofits are in good shape, especially the largest ones, like a lot of those brand name ones that you mentioned. And this year was interesting because it's all these fiscal years cover the fiscal year ending 2019. So it was the fiscal year ended before the pandemic hit. So it was sort of it's always a snapshot, but in this particular instance, the timing was really, I guess, one way to say is unique or troublesome, because we're looking at data that is typically 6 to 12 months old at times because it's based on tax forms, but even more so this year where we see the data and it says that everyone's doing pretty okay considering, but that doesn't include the pandemic, which in the spring, you know, brought everything to a halt. I remember there was one organization, Young Life, out of Colorado Springs. When we spoke to them in June, they were looking at, you know, maybe selling off some medium-term investments like CDs and bonds, and things weren't looking that good. And when we checked back in September, donors came through for them. It's not like they even made a big push or a big campaign to give, but a lot of, I think, what you see with some of the arts organizations and food banks where donors realize, hey, these guys are really in trouble this year. This, you know, this is the rainy day, as I keep hearing this year.
I mean, I think that's all exactly right. And, you know, when we've looked at 2020, we're seeing such a mixed picture. And, you know, it does appear that a lot of the larger organizations are doing okay, but that's not true across the board. And we've seen a tremendous amount of diversity depending on organizational business model. That's something that you all get into in your pieces around the NPT 100, the difference between those organizations that rely on public support versus government funding, and in particular, program services revenue, and that there is a truly mixed picture. When we look at the aggregate of the nonprofit sector in the US, you know, we recently looked back 20 years, and we found that even in those periods of economic crisis you had around the Great Recession and the dot-com crash, that in total, the nonprofit sector managed to turn a profit, sometimes a very small one, every single year for those 20 years. It's my hypothesis that 2020 will be the first year in at least two decades where that's not true, that as a whole, the nonprofit sector will take a loss this year. But in many ways, I think it's fair to guess that that loss won't be quite as big as it could have been. And that, you know, a lot of, especially these larger organizations, have over the years built up rainy day funds that have given them some cushion to weather a year like this. All that said, I think it's really important to recognize that that's not true for the entire nonprofit community. There are a lot of organizations that, you know, had maybe 3 months of cash on hand. And if in particular, there are organizations that relied on in-person events, you know, this year has been devastating for them. And so it is, I think, a challenge for those of us who are looking at the sector as a whole to simultaneously see that the overall story of the sector over the last 20 years and then in 2020 is a relatively positive one, at least from a financial standpoint. But on the other hand, to recognize and kind of hold in our hearts the very real suffering that, that we see across the nonprofit community, and then most importantly in those that are served by nonprofits. So, you know, it's a time where I think we're having to hold these contradictory ideas in our head at the same moment.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, it's not to say that they're treading water on their own. The Johns Hopkins Center for Civil Society is tracking job losses, and they're up to, you know, around 1 million since the pandemic started in the nonprofit sector. So part of that, I think, is not only donors stepping up, but even with donors stepping up generally during the pandemic, that includes, you know, some layoffs or furloughs or job actions like that, job reductions.
That's right. And it is interesting when you look at, you know, Hopkins released an update to that report that found at least, you know, a couple hundred thousand of those jobs had come back. And so, you know, I think we saw a real dark period in the economics of the nonprofit sector earlier this year, and, you know, some signs of a turnaround. That said, you know, to me, the big question, and the question that I think the sector has not figured out how to wrestle with, is duration of this crisis. And that, you know, if we could confidently say that this crisis was going to be wrapping up early next year, then the strategic choices that most nonprofits are making right now, I think, would make a lot of sense. But you can kind of do a thought experiment and imagine what would the conversations be like in nonprofit boardrooms, recognizing those boardrooms are virtual these days, if we knew that, you know, we weren't going to have a vaccine for 2, 3, 4 more years. Or that, you know, the economic dislocation caused by this crisis and overlapping crises would last 2 or 3 years. There would be very different conversations happening in nonprofit boardrooms. There would be conversations about restructuring, conversations about mergers, about acquisitions. And one worry that I have is that nonprofit leaders are holding on to the hope of a relatively short duration, and it's preventing them from having some of the conversations they might have if they thought we were looking at a 3-year crisis. You know, there's no way to know exactly what those conversations are like in those virtual boardrooms. But from what I'm hearing, I think there's an opportunity for the nonprofit sector to at least do the thought experiment of, you know, what if this lasts longer than we think? And, you know, if that were going to happen, how might we behave differently now?
You guys helped us out in compiling the data in terms of some of the tough to get organizations with usually, you know, multiple affiliates all around the country, the ones with, you know, hundreds, in some cases, hundreds of affiliates. How does this data, or just data in general, tax forms lag so much? And then in this time of kind of instant gratification where you have everything at your fingertips, on your phone in your pocket, and you have real-time tracking in some cases of certain topics, particularly in some cases, you know, we've got giving reports, different organizations coming out, you know, right after the quarter ends, updating on where charitable giving is. What do you take away from tax form data that's in some cases, you know, a year, 6 months or more, or even more if it's filed late and then not digitized? I mean, even with the IRS digitizing 990s, there's still going to be that lag on that. How do you make that kind of information relevant either to donors or to organizations or CFOs or executives?
I mean, this is such a live question for us. And, you know, obviously for you guys, you had to really wrestle with this and come up with a creative solution to, you know, get the best answer possible, recognizing it wouldn't be perfect. And I mean, I think that is the essential answer, which is that it is possible to tell a coherent and meaningful and actionable story about nonprofits and the social sector as a whole, but it's not going to be perfect. And the fundamental trade-off that we see is basically a trade-off between recency and comprehensiveness. So, you know, for us at Candid, when tracking the flow of funds, especially from foundations, you know, we have three different mechanisms that we do that. You know, the first are the tax forms that foundations and nonprofits file with the IRS, which is comprehensive, but not current. Then in the middle is voluntarily provided data that these organizations will proactively choose to provide to Candid, which is often much more current. It also has the advantage that we can ask other kinds of questions that go beyond finances to actual programmatic strategy and impact, demographics, governance, et cetera. And then thirdly is trying to have data that comes from the stream of information that all of us are swimming through every day from the news and social media. And so we have algorithms that are reading about 300,000 media articles every night and pulling out the approximately 1,000 or so that are about the social sector and trying to categorize those as, you know, a grant announcement or an executive leadership change, whatever it may be. And so that data has allowed us to track, for example, giving around racial equity and the coronavirus in 2020, and doing that essentially in real time, which has been really powerful and has taught us a lot. But we also recognize it's not even close to comprehensive. And so I just think, again, it's a case where we as a field have to hold a contradiction or a tension in our mind between that, you know, we're never going to have perfect recency and perfect comprehensiveness, but that we can pull together enough sources of data to tell a coherent story. I think you see that here in the NPT 100, where you all were able to have this mixture of self-provided or self-reported data from most of these organizations and to cross-reference that with data from Candid that kind of filled out the story. And I think that's enough. It's enough for us to have a conversation like this. It's enough to be able to see a list and believe that it is pretty close to the truth, even if it's not perfectly the truth. And that to me is a pretty good start.
We'll be right back with more from Jacob Harold of Candid and what trends might stick after the pandemic.
If you like what you're hearing, share it with friends and colleagues on social media. Use the hashtag #FreshResearch or retweet the Nonprofit Times link, and you'll be eligible to win a book from the NPT Library. Another way for folks to find the show, rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. For more than 30 years, the Nonprofit Times has been the leading business publication for nonprofit management. To subscribe, visit shopthenonprofittimes.com. You'll also find special issue coverage, relevant research like our salary and benefits report, and best nonprofits to work for, plus other special reports and webinars. And keep up with the latest breaking news and in-depth reporting at thenonprofittimes.com.
Now more with Jacob Harold, Executive Vice President of Candid, on the NPT 100.
But I am interested in, you know, what you heard in your interactions with nonprofits when you requested this data. You know, did you find that they were more or less responsive this year versus past years? Did they add any commentary that you found interesting? What did you hear when you reached out to them?
It was a unique year, like I said, with COVID and the tax deadlines being pushed back. I was actually a little surprised that we didn't run into more trouble and have to use older data, like in some instances where the organization can't or won't provide their 990 until, say, November or on the November extension, and we may have to use previous year's data. So it's even that's another lag in the data. And with the IRS pushing deadlines back some more because of COVID, I thought we'd get data a lot later, if at all. It wasn't too bad. There's always some instances here and there when that comes, but it didn't impact the collection as much. In terms of just what we've heard, it's really interesting year with the pandemic and the changes. I mean, some folks, like I said, were pretty pessimistic after, say, March and April, and then everywhere, not pretty much across the sector, in terms of types of organizations, everyone seemed to, as the pandemic seemed to improve in the summer, so did their optimism, because donors were stepping up, you know, not just food banks and those social services that everybody was relying on, but even arts organizations were getting donations or getting their ticket sales donated. You know, if donors had bought tickets, they would request if they want to donate that, even though the shows have been canceled and entire seasons have been canceled. So at least in the short term, that helped, you know, weather the blow this year. How that happens next year, or how it impacts next year, I think is to be determined. Because like you mentioned, in particular, social equity organizations, they hadn't really shown up in this year's because a lot of the social justice protests and a lot of the charitable giving toward that is going to show up in next year's numbers. Mm-hmm. And probably in big enough numbers to have an impact. But at the same time, you know, arts organizations, there's a story in the report where some are treading water and some also don't know what next year brings. Even the organizations with big endowments who've already made staff reductions and other layoffs and furloughs, you know, still looking at it. If you look at the Metropolitan Opera, they already canceled their season this year. And I mean, talk about, you know, how that's gonna impact their finances and their tax forms from next year is you know probably massive. That I would imagine they'll drop right off the 100 because that's what they do, and they're not doing it this year, which is kind of, when you think about it, hard to get your head around.
Right.
So looking forward, I think arts organizations, like you mentioned, events revenue is going to have a real big impact on next year's numbers. Even this year, there were some organizations that had events, impacted their numbers this year, but next year I would imagine it's going to be a completely different look in terms of where money is, where giving is going, and where organizations had to cut back in terms of revenue in different categories.
I think that's right. It is so interesting. You know, we were talking about the different time horizons that we get information on, and you know, this conversation itself is indicative of that exact tension that, you know, we're in the middle of one of the most certainly unique years in my lifetime. And I think we all expect the NPT 100 next year will have some very different storylines. You know, when I look at what we see here, in some ways, it's really a story of the nonprofit sector before 2020 and sort of where the field had gotten to after decades of growth.
What types of trends do you expect might transcend the pandemic, that might become sort of the new normal, whether it's financial or giving trends or any sort of things that organizations have been doing that probably they'll either have to or find that it's just better that way?
I mean, another, you know, critical question for the field, and, you know, and I can share both what I think will happen and also what I hope will happen. You know, I do think, you know, we've seen, at least among larger foundations, a significant move towards flexibility. That is, that there's been a lot of project grants that have been turned into general operating support grants because foundations recognize that nonprofits in a year like this need as much flexibility as possible. You know, that's consistent with decades of advocacy for foundations to give more of their grants in the form of general operating support. So I think there's a decent chance that might stick. And I believe personally that would be very positive for the field. I anticipate that we're going to see some alignment in terms of how nonprofits and foundations talk about the demographics of their giving and their programs and their leadership. I think the racial equity uprising here in the U.S., you know, has forced a new kind of conversation about how the dynamics of race play out in philanthropy and in the nonprofit sector. And this extends beyond race to other axes of identity as well. And you see a lot of foundations right now starting to ask nonprofits for that kind of data about their own leadership and boards and often their beneficiary groups. And that is good because these questions are important, but it's also putting quite a burden on nonprofits to manage sometimes dozens of different reporting requirements from different funders. And so I'm hoping to see more of that information flowing, but it flowing in a more coherent way. And, you know, I admit that's something that we at Candid hope we can help to facilitate so that the field can have more informed and hopefully actionable conversations about how identity plays out in social change. So those are a couple of things. This question of big and small, I think is kind of it's up in the air for me. You know, do we see that the uncertainty and challenge of this year, you know, affects bigger organizations proportionately less because they simply have more capacity to absorb change? Or do we see, you know, new kinds of agility from smaller organizations? Fourth, I would say, you know, an open question is around programmatic innovation. You know, some nonprofits that relied on in-person programs have just had to be creative. This also plays out with fundraising, but let's focus on programs. And that, I think, is really positive. When you look at food banks that have created drive-through food distribution systems in, you know, the parking lots of stadiums and like have just moved quickly to serve their communities and, you know, in this moment. And I think that sort of programmatic shakeup can be really, really positive. And, you know, so I hope that the best of those innovations stay. And then more importantly, that the kind of attitude and approach that a lot of nonprofits have taken to just move quickly and pivot quickly and figure out what your community needs and act on it. I hope that really lasts as well. Finally, you know, big question mark, and I mentioned this before, is around governance. And do nonprofits and foundations really rethink some of their strategies and their structures in light of the uncertainty that we're in right now? You know, for foundations, that may play out in, you know, payout rate. For a nonprofit, it might play out in terms of, you know, having a new kind of conversation with that organization across town that you've talked for years about maybe merging with, but it's never gone anywhere. You know, do those conversations really pick up? That to me is a question mark. But again, it's a hope where I hope that we see some innovation, creativity, and openness, and that, you know, we take this set of overlapping crises that we're in right now and use it as an opportunity to reimagine those parts of the sector that aren't working well, but also to really hold on to those parts that are.
For sure. Well, Jacob, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you, Mark.
Thanks to Jacob Harold, Executive Vice President of Candid, and thanks to Candid for helping compile some of the data that went into this year's NPT 100 report. You can find the full report in the November edition of the Nonprofit Times.
That's our episode for today. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to share the fresh research link on Twitter or Facebook to be eligible to win something from the NPT library. You can also share on social media with the hashtag #FreshResearch. And if you like what you hear, please rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. This has been Fresh Research, a podcast from the Nonprofit Times, spotlighting research and trends in the philanthropic sector. Till next time, keep up with us at thenonprofittimes.com for all your nonprofit news.